I'm just, I don't know if you are, I am just amazed, incessantly amazed. I remember when I picked up my first esoteric astrology book in the Gnostica bookstore in, was it 1968? An old ratty volume. The person who had started reading it was underlining things in pencil, got about 10 or 15 pages into it, it all stopped, and pretty well said to himself, "I'm selling this book." And I came in touch, I still remember pulling it off the bookshelf. Well, and I maybe should have bought a new copy, but you know, I was being economical at the time. So I just bought what was in front of me. And I kept it ever since, and now that particular volume, wherever it is, I suppose in storage, hopefully in my mind to a degree, is just incredibly ratty, but not quite as ratty as my Treatise on Cosmic Fire volumes, which are absolutely falling apart and have had to be put into plastic bags just to keep them from going to pieces. Then the electronic age came in, and I found it, in a way, easier to study in this way, of course, using the CD-ROM. But we'll begin here, if we can, discussing this intermediate cross and the connections created by these four signs. And now we'll talk about the relationship of Virgo and Taurus through Vulcan, and even pulling in, one can even pull in some other signs in which the moon veils Vulcan through various decanates. The third Cancer decanate, the third Capricorn decanate, the Pisces, second Pisces decanate. All of these are Vulcanian in their expression. All right, so be it then. We'll sign off on this one, hoping for no sudden disappearances of data. And begin with the next. Okay, friends, I'd like to go on now. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure 86 D, Section D. We're on page 273. And we're continuing with a discussion of Virgo. Previously, we talked about four signs related to each other through the moon's veiling of Vulcan and Neptune. And these signs concern primarily with the stage of discipleship and the manifestation of a solar disciple, presumably a true solar disciple, an initiate of the third degree. Here we find Virgo is related to Taurus through Vulcan. Right. Which brings in what might be called the endurance aspect of the will to be. The will to come to birth in this case, the endurance aspect of the will to be. And this carries the process of gestation through a long period of time, long on the microcosmic level relatively, and far longer when you think about the actual endurance required to make primitive man into an initiate of the first degree. So it carries the incarnated Son of God through the experiences of the dark time, and I want to say in the hall of ignorance, wherein the personality becomes the mother in the stage of gestation, guarding through natural law, that which will one day emerge, and through the period of infancy upon the physical plane, infancy upon the physical plane, and through the stage of adolescence until the initiate maintains full maturity. What is a fully mature initiate? An initiate of the third degree, or of the fifth? We're talking about the birthing of the Christ principle, the nurturing in the hall of ignorance of the gestation period, the infancy, the babes in Christ upon the physical plane, and I suppose this is initiates of the, perhaps of the first and second degree, a stage of adolescence. Well, could this be second degree, or perhaps third, although one is a young man at the second degree and a rich young man at the third degree, and full maturity is attained, I suppose, in terms of the Christ principle, more at the fifth degree, where the soul is truly radiant and blazing in its higher Leonian nature. That soul not being the consciousness within the causal body, but something which is triadal. So this necessitates persistence, endurance, and continuity of effort. These are all Vulcanian keywords. And this is one of the characteristics imparted or stimulated by the energies pouring from Vulcan. Persistence, endurance, and continuity of effort. Without let-up and leeway, which is kind of interesting because it's often said that the second-race soul proceeds without let-up and leeway and has great persistence and endurance in a way. Now, Vulcan is primarily related to the heart of the sun on its innermost levels. So there is a sense, being so close to the sun as it is, that the first ray is a soul ray, but something still more interior involves a soft line ray like the second ray, 4 and 2, I think. Okay, so this necessitates persistence, endurance, and continuity of effort, and it is one of the characteristics imparted or stimulated by energies pouring from Vulcan, the endurance aspect of the will to be, the will to be in form. There are also other wills to be on different levels. You can realize that these are first ray attributes. Yes, in a fundamental sense, I would say so. And are the reverse side of those usually emphasized, namely death or the activity of the destroyer aspect, which is more Plutonian. But, you know, D.K. said of Roberto Saggioli, you have the will like tempered steel of your second-ray soul. And he did speak of this incredible persistence without let-up or leeway. So I think Vulcan is both a hard-line and a soft-line planet, although we experience it more in the hard-line at the present time, because we are working towards soul energy and not necessarily towards spirit energy. Taurus is an expression of the third unmanifested hierarchy. Let's see what we have here for that hierarchy. And we go back here to page 34, I guess, and we see Taurus as light through knowledge. Obviously a very high type of knowledge and a high type of light, expressing primarily the fifth ray. Just the third of the unmanifested creative hierarchies, and the tenth numbering up. The soft line is not particularly involved here. It's more the hard line rays, but especially the mental rays, as the number three here seems to suggest, and the number five. So Taurus is an expression of the third unmanifested hierarchy, and let's put this down, what it is, through knowledge, light through knowledge. And of this hierarchy, we know nothing beyond the fact that it is concerned with the light which liberates from death. A kind of higher version, a kind of higher, oh my goodness, of the unfettered enlightened of Shambhala. The light which liberates from death. Sometimes it's called the light of life itself. I think we pointed out that not only do Aries and Pisces have a connection with the light of life itself, but Taurus does as well. I think we see that on page 332. So, several of the same mantras, the same mantra is used in several cases. I guess death is a question of consciousness and of the inability to see the field into which the consciousness is passing when attempting to view it from the field in which the consciousness is immersed. But there could be such a liberating light that all possible fields of entry for the consciousness are seen simultaneously, and that would be indeed a liberation from death, or from that sense of annihilation that we sometimes feel when we think of death. Therefore you have Taurus related to illumination, the mother of illumination, just like the moon is the mother of the form, Vulcan, first ray or endurance, and also related to the release of great light. And it may well be that the third creative hierarchy, which is the hierarchy of liberating light, showing the, revealing the unknown as if it were the known, and allowing those in a lesser field, apparently, to be fully aware of presences in a higher field, liberating light. Perhaps this is ruled by hierarchically by Vulcan itself, ruled by Vulcan. After all, Vulcan is the hierarchical ruler of Taurus, which is assigned to the third creative hierarchy. And then we have Virgo, the Christ life, latent and unexpressed, as is the third creative hierarchy, at least within our solar system. The liberating light, the light which liberates from death, is not yet expressed in our solar system, or at least in the lower parts of our solar system, maybe upon some of the higher etheric, cosmic etheric subplanes it can be sensed. And then the moon, the form nature, the substance of the flame which lights the way. So the wick is made of substance. It burns and lights the way. Wick is substantial. It burns and lights the way. So what do we have? Taurus, Vulcan, the third creative hierarchy, liberating light, the light which liberates from death. Amazing thought. Virgo, the Christ life, which at a certain point at least is latent and unexpressed, at least in the early days of evolution and in the Hall of Ignorance, and then emerging into some degree of recognizability as the love petals are stimulated and organized, and the moon, which is the form nature. We don't have Neptune listed here, we just have the moon and Vulcan. These are esoteric rulers of Taurus. And the third creative unmanifested hierarchy is connected with Vulcan hierarchically. So what TK says here, undoubtedly true, a vast field of psychological research in connection with all the constellations, the planets, and hierarchies is indicated above. Psychological research in a larger sense than the strictly human, because planets have psyches, solar logoi have psyches, constellational logoi have psyches, and we are interested in their quality and how these qualities are related to each other. So psychology is largely a study of quality and of the interactivity of various qualities and the way that this interaction enhances the expression of that which it interacts with. We all know if we remained in isolation, without being exposed to the other qualities, our psyche would be far poorer. So we are interested in the psychological quality of all these entities, not just the human being. And if we think of Cosmic Fire, Treatise on Cosmic Fire is a great textbook in planetary, systemic, and cosmic psychology, and as the psychological key to the secret doctrine, we understand the larger implications of the word psychology. So a vast field of psychological research is indicated in the above, but it is of too vast a nature for me to consider in this treatise. One wonders whether treatises to come will expand upon these matters, or whether they have to be even more practical given the emergency in which humanity finds itself. It will constitute the astrology of the future. So here he links, obviously, astrology and psychology. Astrology and psychology are linked. It will constitute the astrology of the future and will begin to be understood when group consciousness and continuity of consciousness are established among men. Because if you take a look at the light which liberates from death, and liberating light, this is the light which continuity brings, continuity of consciousness brings. In our own little deaths, we are ignorant of the field into which we will be transited or removed or expedited. We're ignorant of that field except in rather vague ways. And if we could simultaneously see with the liberating light the dead with us right now, there would be an overcoming of the fear of death on this little microcosmic level. We would see all alive and well in pursuit of their various activities, but of course the fact is we're quite overwhelmed by trying to handle our lower world with the various inputs we receive from the higher, subtler levels, which are not the full revelation of all that is going on those levels. So we have to be careful here not to overwhelm the system, and I think that there are various safeguards put in place even now to make sure that man does not find himself in an utterly overwhelming situation. However, as a form of mental gymnastics and as indicating possibilities, the concept is of use to you, for it widens your horizon and indicates the marvelous scope of the divine plan. So much of what DK has given is of value simply for that purpose, and the synthesis underlying manifestation. So great hints can be garnered from this fivefold relation we see, Taurus, Vulcan, third creative hierarchy, Virgo, and the Moon. And they can expand our appreciation of the divine plan and give us the sense, just a small sense, a fleeting sense, of the great synthesis underlying manifestation. We have to actually see these relationships in order to understand the synthesis. Right. Now, Neptune, which is veiled by the Moon also, and which is revealed here as veiled by the Moon, whereas earlier we were simply told it was Vulcan, that the Moon veiled in Virgo. Neptune is, as you know, the god of the waters, and the term waters covers many angles of the esoteric wisdom. So Neptune is going to be associated with all of these concepts listed here below, the whole concept of matter, universal, and itemized. The waters of substance, the ocean of life, the astral plane as a whole, the desired emotional nature, all of these associated with Neptune. Interestingly, the world of focused incarnation for the masses, based upon desire, the lower part of which of Neptune, the lower part of Neptune ruling that, and mass existence as in Cancer. These are the waters, quite extensive in their meaning. But the whole concept of matter, universal, and itemized on every level. The waters of substance. It's not necessarily matter, but that which substands matter, always relative to what is considered matter. Substance is always a bit more subtle and is causative with respect to matter. The ocean of life, the great fields of energy in which all lives are swimming. In which all lives are, as it were, swimming. The world of astral glamour and reaction, the lower aspect of Neptune is involved with that, the astral plane as a whole, indeed, and the cosmic astral plane as well, and the Buddhic plane should be mentioned, and even the monadic plane in a sense, because of the sacrificial nature of Neptune and its relation to both Pisces, the father's home, and Virgo, the selfless task undertaken, the desire and emotional nature, which is generally the type of principled expression we find upon the astral plane, the world of focused incarnation, it is desire that leads us into it for the masses, ruled by Cancer, the sign of mass consciousness. And Neptune does have much to do with inducing incarnation. There is a certain attached longing which promotes reincarnation. And mass existence, which is sentient but not intelligent. Sentient but not intelligent. So in a way, the pre-mental stages of human life are indicated by Neptune and the Moon together. The irrational part of man, the Moon and Neptune. Sometimes think of rationality in terms of ratios and the factor of comparison. I think the factor of comparison enters with rationality. 2/3, 2 compared with 3. A ratio and a comparison implied. Of all these attributes or conditions of the feminine pole in existence, the material aspect, the constellation Cancer is outstandingly symbolic. The constellation which governed the first half of the previous solar system. A feminine constellation, definitely. Whereas, just as Virgo is. So we have many attributes and conditions of the feminine pole, and Cancer is the major expression of this, Cancer being most associated with Neptune, which is here being described. So Cancer, symbol of the feminine, of the mother, just as Virgo is. Symbol of the feminine and of the mother, as is Virgo, in a more sophisticated, I think, way. Cancer is preceding Leo. It precedes Leo, the sign of individuality and of self-conscious effort, the man realizing himself to be and defining himself in a certain way and seeing himself in a certain way, decides through ambition to better his lot, to increase his power and his scope in the environment which he perceives, to increase the ratio of himself to the environment, so he is seen to play a bigger part within it. He wants to become more the sphere than the small circle of the point. So Cancer precedes Leo, the sign of individuality and of self-conscious effort, and is concerned with the slow rhythm of mass life. These are the instinctual responses, very much tied to the seasons and to the cycles of the moon, monthly cycles. It's not a driving force. It lacks the power of will. If you look at Cancer compared with Capricorn, there is no first ray coming through Cancer per se, although some very distinguished first ray people have been born in Cancer, such as Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great. That's interesting, but the first ray was coming from a different source. So it's not about individuality and self-conscious effort, it's about mass response, mass reaction, and is not willful, but simply instinctual. So the slow rhythm of mass life, either instinctually active or the reactions of an imposed consciousness, which is the result of chosen experience after initiation. So the Cancerian initiate can go back to redeem. Cancerian initiate can return to redeem. He becomes what is called the crab that cleans the ocean of matter, which flows around the soul of men. So there's going to be the initiate dealing with the slow rhythms of mass life, probably trying to raise it towards the individuality of Leo, the self-consciousness of Leo, the stage of personality, expression, and integration. So Cancer connotes mass life, leading to group life after the experience of initiation, for which its polar opposite, Capricorn, stands, and which finds full expression in Aquarius, that is group life, which completes the experience of Leo and fuses it with that of Cancer and Capricorn. Well, we have kind of a, from Cancer to Leo to, well, we can include Scorpio, but Capricorn to Aquarius. If we really want to look at three stages, which we can call mass, individual, and group, mass, individual, and group are symbolized by Cancer, Leo, and Aquarius. But there are intervening stages most necessary in order to create this liberated group consciousness. So, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, with their opposites, looks like an important six-pointed star, which takes us from the personal to the transpersonal. So, from the personal to the transpersonal. We begin with the mass consciousness in Cancer, we become individualized, the dominating individual, the self-aware individual in Leo. We begin to become aware of the pairs of opposites, a higher something within us, a Christ consciousness within us in Virgo. The triumph of the Christ consciousness will occur in Capricorn in a way, but an initial and important victory occurs in Scorpio, which is not listed here. Then we have the dominating Christ consciousness in Capricorn, and its full expression in service through Aquarius, and a still deeper, more sacrificial expression of the fully developed, really, really fully developed Christ consciousness in Pisces, where the life is far more sacrificial even than in Aquarius, far more empathic, far more identified with that which has to be not only served, but saved. So we're moving from the personal to the transpersonal and even to the universal. Yes. They form another six-pointed star of profound significance, which is the subjective counterpart of the six-pointed star, the interlaced triangles, which we call Solomon's Seal. Solomon's Seal stands for so many things today. You know, it is the symbol of Judaism. It's the symbol, in a way, of the State of Israel. It's the symbol of the astral plane. It's the symbol of the monad. It's the symbol of these of the interaction within the zodiacal circle, which takes us from the lower hemicycle to the higher hemicycle. It moves from the individual to the universal. Yes, I think that would be a good way of saying it. Lead us from the individual to the universal. Because these last signs are signs of universality. The interlacing of the two above triangles constitutes what is called a triangle of humanity. A triangle of humanity, not the only one apparently. And certainly a very human stage is indicated by Cancer, Leo, Virgo. And under the theories of the science of triangles, it concerns the relation of the individual to the mass of humanity and of the disciple to the group. We are already becoming a disciple in Virgo. We become a triumphant disciple and initiate in Capricorn. And then a truly group conscious disciple or initiate in Aquarius, identified as the group. And in Pisces, still more identified, not just with the group, but the many groups identified with the whole. These triangles warrant most careful study. It is the planet Neptune which is predominantly active in bringing about such an activity in Cancer, that adequate momentum can be set up, enough desire, I suppose, which will produce progress through the intervening signs to Aquarius. Now let's take a look at how this works. Of all the six signs listed, only one of them is not related to Neptune. Am I even right there? Well, of all the six signs listed, only one is not related to Neptune. And even that we can find in even that one, and that's Capricorn, and even there we can find a relationship. So Cancer is ruled esoterically and hierarchically by Neptune. Leo is ruled esoterically. The sun veils Neptune in the esoteric position. Virgo, and Virgo the moon veils Vulcan, but Neptune as well. So all three of these have a strong Neptunian component. As for Capricorn, well, no, but Venus is the hierarchical ruler and Neptune the higher octave, and Neptune is said to be, interestingly, kind of a planet which is reversely exalted in Capricorn because it falls. Every fall is an exaltation. Jupiter is falling in Capricorn and therefore is exalted, and Neptune is therefore exalted. The opposite is true. So very high forms of intuitive psychism are given in Capricorn with Jupiter and Neptune rising from their fall position into a kind of reverse exaltation. As for Aquarius, Neptune is one of the veiled hierarchical rulers. All three planets ruling the form are veiled by the moon in the hierarchical position, and then with Pisces, Neptune has a special relationship connected with the whole of humanity. So Neptune, interesting, through desire, can generate adequate momentum. I imagine this is through desire. We oftentimes think of Neptune as a planet of tranquility, but if you see how some of the Greek gods are portrayed, Neptune is powerful indeed. If you think of the power of a hurricane or a typhoon out at sea, then the power becomes overwhelming. The whipping up of the emotional nature through desire, driven by the wind, which is whose element is air, connected with the Buddhic plane, or maybe with the mental plane that with which air is sometimes connected. Well, excuse me. I would like here to add something more to the teaching, says the Tibetan, about the wheel of life and its reversed motion, which occurs at a particular stage of evolution. Well, he's talking about generating momentum, isn't he? Maybe, I don't know if that stimulated his mind in that direction, but the activity of Cancer such that that adequate, did he say momentum? That adequate blank, I guess it's momentum, I must have erased it somehow, can be set up which will produce progress through the intervening signs. I suppose if we go activity in Cancer that, and we look that up, activity in Cancer that, okay, well, I should, you know what I should have done there, I should have definitely gone backwards and put a quotation mark in front of it. And now we'll have one. That adequate momentum, yes, the word momentum was definitely there. Okay. So, I would like here to add something more to the teaching about the wheel of life and its reverse motion, which occurs at a particular stage in evolution. It's, remember, it's the reversal of currents within forms. And we think of the human form, especially in our the currents flowing between chakras. Perhaps this is operative in other types of forms, greater and lesser as well. I would call your attention to the fact that the difficulty of the problem and the intensification of the life of conscious duality, which marks the earlier stages of the path of discipleship, up to and immediately preceding the third initiation, where a fearsome conflict is fought, he tells us, obviously between dualities, a fearsome conflict between opposites is fought, is based upon the wheel of the zodiac contributing its influences to the life of the form nature in a normal manner. So there is a difficult problem. If there's not two, there's not a problem, and the two have to be in contention. And the intensification of the life of conscious duality, where the soul and personality are truly battling, which marks the earlier stages of the path of discipleship up to and immediately preceding the third initiation, so that's still considered discipleship before the third initiation, is based upon the wheel of the zodiac contributing its influences to the life of the form nature in a normal manner. We can bring in more of these zodiacal energies, and they must be reconciled. They're involved in conflict. The individual is increasingly sensitive. Certain energies are promoting the soul's expression. Others are helping the personality to be rebellious. So this intensification and the great sense of conflicted duality is based upon zodiacal contribution to the life of the form nature in the normal manner. This is normal. The myriads of lives which constitute the form are conditioned by the signs of the zodiac, proceeding in its normal manner clockwise. due to the precession of the equinoxes. Mm-hmm. That's quite a statement. That the many little lives are conditioned by the zodiac due to the sort of retrogression of the vernal equinox through the signs in a clockwise manner. This is important. It tells us how it happens. So let's just say that the lower elemental lives and the tiny elementals are conditioned by this retrogression, we would call it, but it's called also precession. Whilst the life of the disciple focused in the soul consciousness is governed, or should I remark, should be governed, by the wheel proceeding anti-clockwise, counterclockwise. So there are two different aspects of man, conditioned each by a wheel moving in, by wheels, let's put it like that way, moving in opposite directions. Clockwise for the tiny elemental lives and for the larger elemental groupings, and counterclockwise for the consciousness. So there is what you call a wheel of consciousness and a wheel of form. Oh, world of form. Well, let's look at it a little differently here. WH of form, wheel of form. Both motions. Well, of course, you know, we're not really having the zodiac, at this point at least, turn in two directions simultaneously. No. Both motions are in potent opposition. What these motions actually are, well, we certainly need something, a rather faster cycle than a precessional cycle to influence the little lives in the bodies. That's a 2100-year cycle, a 2500-year cycle. We need something faster than that to condition the lower lives. But let's just take it at face value that they are thus conditioned and that they are stimulated to move in opposition or to express themselves in opposition. Maybe I would say they are stimulated to express themselves separatively and to emphasize rotary motion. Let's just say the lesser lives are stimulated to express themselves separatively and in terms of rotary motion. Whereas the spiral cyclic ascending motion is the kind of motion which the counterclockwise wheel stimulates. There are still some mysteries, many unsolved things here, because this precession of the equinoxes is really very slow, but it kind of sets a pattern of what retrogression means, what clockwise movement means. So the myriads of lives which constitute the form are conditioned by the signs of the zodiac proceeding in its normal manner, clockwise, due to the precession of the equinoxes. And yet there must be many lives, tiny little lives, within any form that are conditioned by all 12. It takes 25,000 years to move through all 12 of the signs or constellations, given the very slow 1 degree equals 72 years regression of the vernal point. But at least the pattern is set. And perhaps the precession of the equinoxes sets some sort of stamp on matter which inclines it to remain itself and not to aggregate in ways which are related to group unity, cohesion, and so forth. The third aspect does not serve the second aspect unless it is deliberately induced to do so, and there must be something about the energy released with the precession of the equinoxes, it being the prototype of other precessions, I suppose, which inclines matter to remain what it is and not to serve the second aspect. Both motions are in potent opposition and, symbolically speaking, produce eventually, and this is what's important, produce eventually that tearing asunder which always precedes initiation and illumination. Ripping. A ripping away of consciousness from the tendencies of form. Pretty part of the law of repulse, I suppose. Part of the law of repulse, and which is testified to by all mystics and initiates, St. Paul giving a very vivid testimony, I'll paraphrase, that which I do not, that which I would not do, that I do. O wretched man that I am, who can save me from the body of this death? So oftentimes compelled to go along with the wheel, turning clockwise, but finally having enough will and persistence, power, to move in the counterclockwise direction forward as a consciousness in process of liberation, while the form nature and all of its tiny elemental lives continues to turn for a time in the clockwise manner until thoroughly trained and reconditioned and thus elevated to turn also in a clockwise manner and counterclockwise manner, and thereby be subsumed into the spirit. Well, that may be yet a little while. I suppose before that we have to have the wheel turning upon itself, the wheel becoming one thing. But anyway, the tearing, the ripping, the sense that there is old Adam and new Adam, that there is original sin in one, turning in a clockwise manner, as D.K. inclined us to think, that the tendency of the newly individualized man was to follow energy currents which were moving in a clockwise manner rather than counterclockwise, and thus go against the normal stream of zodiacal motion. So the rending, the tearing, the pain, the wretchedness, the wretched aspirant until the wheel is really reversed, perhaps after the experience in the desert where the decisions are made to put Satan, the lower nature, to the side and to overcome the world, the flesh, and the devil, then at that time, I would say the rending and the tearing is not so great. Later, there may be a rending and tearing in terms of the contrast of the way humanity as a whole is turning compared to the way the soul-infused disciple is tending. But that's a different thing. The war is not within the disciple, but within his relationship to the normal elemental tendencies of humanity. So both motions are in potent opposition and, symbolically speaking, produce eventually that tearing asunder, a kind of crucifixion in a way, which always precedes initiation and illumination. So we can experience, I suppose, the burning ground. The burning ground must be equivalent, EQU, to a tearing asunder. There must be rending experiences upon the burning ground, and which is testified to by all mystics and initiates. This is in reality that which produces the destruction of the veil of illusion, as it is symbolically called, referred to in the New Testament, as the veil of the temple was rent in twain from top to the bottom. So the rending process of the conflicting directions tears the veil. So the rending process caused by contrary motion rends the veil. Consciousness breaks through the integrity of those veils of illusion, glamour, maya, and the veils of maya are ripped. The veils of maya are etheric, but contain the three contents, the separative mind, the glamorous emotions, the chaotic impulsions. And as the consciousness becomes very deliberate in seeking its freedom and divorcing itself from attachment to those veils, its motion, contrary to the motion of the veils, rends the veils. So this constitutes the result of the dual activity of the great wheel. Every man is, in a way, a great wheel. But we are talking about the zodiacal wheel and how its dynamics somehow produce the rending of the microcosmic wheel and eventually of later, more holistic wheels. It precedes the dark night of the soul wherein the man stands pendant between heaven and earth. The dark night of the soul is said to be many things, but somewhere it says the realization came upon the initiate Jesus of the age-long separation of the human consciousness from God. Realization of all the human misery in the face of divine possibilities. So this constitutes the result of the dual activity, the rending of the veil. So the pain along the fourth ray line, there's always a ripping and tearing with the fourth ray. The pain produces liberation from identification with illusion, glamour, and glamour and maya. It precedes the dark night of the soul wherein the man stands pendant between heaven and earth. It's kind of like, you know, not being on any cross in particular. Let's say neither on the fixed cross or the cardinal cross. And then cries, "Where is the one God who has forsaken me? He is nowhere to be seen, and all of the gods have gone. I stand alone, bereft, yet unafraid. I see the dark of form, I see the dark of distant spirit, and all the light of soul seems gone." Why is that? And we can say, why is that? Well, let us say, the soul or angel has returned to its source. Solar angel was the one God, the great supervisory intelligence of amazing will, love, and power. And it has left the man alone to fend for himself on neither cross, in kind of a no man's land, between the heaven of the monad and the hell or the earth of form life. Then comes the cry, triumphant, "I know I am the light of God. There is naught else." Great teachers have said, "I am the light of the world." And this is realized, the light of day breaks forth, the light of Buddha, the light of the intuitive plane. One realizes that one can take one's place within the cosmic ethers rather than within the confines of the causal body. So this is really marvelous from the old commentary. Where is the one God who has forsaken me? He's been there, that God, that solar angel has been there for many millions of years. He is nowhere to be seen, and all of the gods have gone, all of my lesser gods that I used to worship, ideals, attractions, things which elevated my consciousness are all gone and hold no appeal to me. I stand alone. This is the Vulcan experience, bereft yet unafraid, seeing clearly and knowing clearly that one will penetrate into the liberation. I see the dark of form and spirit being still distant, as it will not be for the fifth degree initiate, but may well seem for the one going through the fourth degree. I see the dark of distant spirit and all the light of soul. All the illumination which filled the causal body seems gone. But then a greater light, which is cosmic etheric light of intuition, the fourth plane, breaks forth. Then comes the cry triumphant, I know I am the light of God. There is naught else. So there is a disidentification from the causal body, which has now fragmented and somehow been destroyed. And a new home is found within the cosmic ethers, representing the mind, heart, and will of God. There is naught else. So this liberation awaits us all, and I suppose the more we know about it in the technical sense, the better we will be able to progress through that process. Without undue despair, without fear, and with the sure faith that this loss of the causal body is just a temporary loss to be followed by a far greater restoration having to do with the true spiritual nature of man, the spiritual triad informed by the monad. Through the moon and also through Jupiter, Virgo is brought into relationship with Aquarius, Moon being the hierarchical ruler, Jupiter the esoteric ruler, which means in this case with the seventh creative hierarchy, the very lowest one. So Virgo has much to do with substance, with matter, but also with the very lowest plane, systemic plane, the seventh, wherein the seventh manifested creative hierarchy rules, or with atomic substance, which a tiny elemental lives, atomic substance, out of which the dense body of manifestation can be constructed. If the Christ life, which the Virgin nurtures, is to be brought to successful manifestation. So it's interesting that Aquarius releases Virgo from her load, yes, but Aquarius makes it possible for the Christ in Virgo to manifest on the densest plane. There's much of practicality in both of these signs, and it's quite amazing to see the universally thinking Aquarius, Aquarian, able to do so many practical things in the world, really the so-called man for all seasons. So the Christ life must, in the Aquarian age, express right here on the physical plane, and that's why we expect during the Aquarian age a real regeneration of the physical plane. The cause of manifestation is, esoterically speaking, the stimulation of the dead lives, the so-called inorganic substance, which is ruled by Aquarius, into activity and into usefulness to the positive Christ life, which is the agent of stimulation. So it is, in a sense, a reversal of roles with Virgo stimulating Aquarius, and especially, especially the higher expression of Virgo under Jupiter, where the Christ life is really gloriously manifesting and can stimulate the dead lives, the so-called inorganic matter, which Aquarius rules. Hence, the moon is the symbol of the response of the dead lives to the outer spiritual impact. The sun, in a way, irradiates the moon. The central idea of occultism that even the smallest atom of substance has in it the germ of that which can respond to spiritual energy is preserved for us in the teaching anent the influence of Jupiter, the second ray agent of the Christ spirit. So Jupiter Moon in Virgo, Jupiter Moon in Aquarius, and the fullness of the Christ being brought into abundant expression in the Aquarian realm, which is the realm of the dead or inorganic lives ruled by the Moon. And we then will manifest completely, etherically and physically, that which the Christ has in store. So we are here at the end of Esoteric Astrology 86, Section D, always on some page or another, page 277. Okay, and our next work will be Esoteric Astrology, either 86 or 87, depending on the timing. Page 277. So much of deep interest here available. Let's just close this with an om. Sacred word, especially connected with the manifestation of the soul through matter. That's really what we've been talking about here in this Virgo chapter, how the inner Christ grows into full maturity and can manifest on every level, including the very densest level, ruled by Aquarius and the Moon. Okay, friends, it's been an interesting day, and so far, the technical snafus, I don't want to speak too soon, have not followed me into this later program. I did a little 22-minute program, suddenly curtailed, and hopefully we can get that to you. I don't know where it ended exactly, but I know where it began, and I know where 86A ended. So all of this will be coming to you before long. Meanwhile, so much to ponder as we look at the interrelationships of all the amazing energies which we can begin to understand and utilize to help us scientifically progress in the development of the soul and the liberation of the spirit.